Okay, we're recording. Okay, since we are running late, it's 8:20 already. How do you feel about skipping the intro? Who's your friend?
You want have the intro next week?
Oh, you want a friend who came 1 week, and she won. No, not Shelley Whitman. There was another woman who came. There's another woman who came, who I never met her before. She came for 1 week, and then she said, "Oh, when is Miriam?" And I said, "I didn't know," and then she never came back.
Was
mine? I think so. You have a lot of friends. Okay. Well, here was the introduction. I'll give you a very abbreviated introduction.
Yeah,
we're continuing anyway into next week. This is Miriam part one. Miriam part two is next week.
So then you have to do part three, then you're saying?
Well, no, I'll just
capture
it quickly. If it's possible, I can do it quicker than usual. As promised in previous classes, when a slight discomfort was expressed at meeting on Memorial Day, I'd like to dedicate this class to the memory of those people who fought for this country so that we could have the religious freedoms that we have. My grandfather was in the Navy, and he died as a result of a war wound that he received in the war. So I don't know if he would be considered one of the people that we mourn today, but we have a little plaque from President Eisenhower. He died. It was friendly fire. It was like a horrible, awful thing. So, but
Did he get a medal?
He has many medals. Yes. Yeah, he had a few medals. My mother has one. So I was going to start. I was going to read you parts of the story. My aunt is very into folk tales, and she gave me as a gift at some point a book called Miriam's Tambourine, which is Jewish folk tales from around the world. Very interesting. So the first story is, of course, about Miriam's Tambourine. And I'll just tell you briefly what this story is about. About this rabbi and his son, and they live in Babylonia. And at the time when they lived, there's always a Jewish advisor to the king. From the time of Daniel, there had always been a Jewish advisor to the king. And the way it was determined was based on this particular book that was given by an angel to Daniel when he was in the lion's den that contained all the secrets of the universe in it. And that whoever could open up this book, he was the next Jewish advisor. So it came time that they needed a new Jewish advisor. And all the people from the big towns came. I mean, I could draw this out, whatever. So there was this rabbi and his son who would sit and learn Torah in their hut in the forest all day long. So finally, a messenger made it to them and said, "You should go." And they said, "Okay, we'll go and we'll try." And they start walking, and they're discussing Torah so much that 4 days and four nights pass, and they realize that they're lost because they're not even paying attention to where they're going. They're so involved in their Torah discussion. They end up looking at this beautiful palace behind the gate. And they walk up to the gate, and the gate is sealed, and they didn't know this, but the gate only opens once every 100 years, and only for a moment. And they were there at the moment when the gates opened. The gates opened, they slip in, the gates close behind them, they're in a beautiful garden. They were brought to this beautiful, pearly, shiny castle. They see a key in the door, they open the key, they walk in, there's an old woman there, beautiful eyes, who's taking leaves from a silver bowl and crushing them into another bowl. And they say to her, "What is your name? And what are you doing?" She says to them, "Hello, Shalom. Shalom Aleichem, peace be unto you," as the English translation says in this book. "I am taking these leaves. I have children suffer all over the globe from Erev Shabbat to Erev Shabbat. I take these leaves, I crush them. On Erev Shabbat, I blow them into the wind, and this brings Shabbat peace to all of my children who are suffering for Shabbat." So they could last till the next week, and they said to her, "What is your name?" She says, "Sarah." And they say, "Who is your husband?" She says, "Abraham." And all of a sudden, they realize where they are. Mm-hmm. And they say to her, "Well, we want to go and open this book." She says, "Well, you're right, this book can only be opened by the purest of souls. I'm sorry to tell you this, but you are even not a purest soul." And they say, "Well, how do we get to be a pure soul so that we can immerse so that we can open this book?" And she says, "You need to immerse yourselves in Miriam's well." They said, "How do we get to Miriam's well?" She said, "Well, the evil one put serpents all around Miriam's well so nobody can reach it. How do you get through the evil serpents? By Miriam's tambourine. Use Miriam's tambourine to get in." Okay, and where is Miriam's tambourine? With Miriam. So she gives them this whole, I mean, the story is written very beautifully, and she gives them this whole thing. You have to go to this place and to a cave, and they go, and they see Miriam sitting there on the shore of the Yamsuf of the Reed Sea, and she's playing this tambourine, and they automatically need to start dancing. And they explain to her the situation. She said, "Please take my tambourine, but realize that if I don't have it, and at least once in a 24-hour cycle, then my eternal life is finished. So she can trust them with this tambourine. They take the tambourine, boom, boom, they go into the well, they immerse themselves, they come out, they give back the tambourine, they go, they open the book, and they're the new advisors to the king, Jewish advisors to the king, which is, of course, a good thing so that the Jews in Babylonia can then have good things. Okay, so that was the introduction. Not really very short.
Oh, but such a nice
I love these kinds of stories. So this is a great book. Really,
so
and
nice.
Very interesting.
I like to listen to these things.
These are nice stories. So the question that I was going to ask you, and that I'm not going to ask you because we're going to jump into our sources, was what is this fascination with Miriam? With Miriam's tambourine here, Miriam's well, that Miriam's well that led the Jews in the desert for 40 years, that's where they got their water from. What is this fascination with Miriam? There's a school, a post-high school program in Israel now called Be'er Miriam, Miriam's well. There is many progressive women would put a certain piece on their Seder plate to remind us of Miriam's. An orange, okay, I know why an orange, but don't know why they feel the need to add this extra thing. But okay, whatever, but there's this fascination with Miriam. Miriam's always the symbol of the forward-thinking lady, whatever. So what is this fascination with Miriam? Why an orange? Because it's actually sort of a funny story. My understanding is, and I might get the quote a little bit wrong, I apologize. I don't remember who actually said it, but they said, what should we put? We want to put something on this Seder plate that's going to remind us of Miriam. Something shows the women's plight. Miriam's name, by the way, means bitter. And she was named that. The Gemara tells us, right?
Yeah.
The Gemara tells us she was named that because of such difficult times that Jews were going through. So they, somebody asked, "Oh, well, what can we put on the Seder plate?" And the answer—I don't remember who gave the answer even. The answer was, "You could put an orange. Like it doesn't matter. You could put anything, even an orange. But the orange doesn't necessarily have significance. But it was sort of a flippant, tongue-in-cheek answer."
The orange is bitter.
No, that is why.
Okay.
Why?
So you know, you can do whatever about it. I think we have three sheets here.
Two.
And she asked for some sheets.
Everyone take a one.
Yeah.
Okay. And then everyone take a. There are a lot of C's in here. Okay, the C's and C's got mixed up. Okay. Take two. It says on the bottom of the page what the page number is.
I'll take a two.
Yes, sure, you can keep them. These are all yours.
12 is a three.
I know 12 is a three. Okay, we all set?
Yes, we're all set.
Okay. We're going to start with the first story, so we're going to look at. We're going to be doing a lot of flipping in our commission tonight, so try to keep up instead of photographing all the sources. Okay, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about the Mialdot, the midwives in the time of Pharaoh's decree to kill all the firstborn sons. And we mentioned that one opinion, the prevalent opinion that seems to be in the rabbinic sources, is that these midwives were Yochaved and Miriam. They are referred to as Shifa and Puah. Do you need a source?
Two.
Two. Page one?
No. One, two. Number two.
Okay.
No.
Thank you. There's one. Need another page two? No. Okay. We said that the Torah tells us their names are Shifra and Puah, and the Gemara tells us that Shifra was Yochaved and Puah was Miriam. So we have a midrash here in front of us, source number one, starting in the middle of the first line. Zavar Acher is giving, we gave a number of suggestions as to why one is called Pua, one is called Shifra. Pua shehofia hapanim keneged paro. Why is Miriam called Pua? Because she like stuck her face in Paro's face. The zakfa chotmabo, and she,
nothing
she put her stamp on him.
Hoth Nabo. Well, not her spam. She just like, she was in his face. Amalo, oi lo lo, toha ish, kishayavo alo kimli parami menu. She said, oh my gosh, what a horrible man you are. I feel bad for you for when God comes to punish you. Nismalela hache malaharga. Paro naturally wanted to kill her. Shifra, why is your chavis called Shifra? Shaitan mishaperet al divrei bita umifayashad alaha. That she made pretty the words of her daughter, of Miriam, and she like, she pacified him. Amralo, she said to him, Atamash, gich aleha, tinoken hi. Seinayo dat kum. You're gonna go nuts over what she's saying. She's a little baby. She doesn't mean anything. She doesn't know what she's saying. So here, now, was what Miriam said, was that correct? Was Paro a not nice guy? Yes. Was God going to come and punish him terribly? Yes.
He must have been a teenager.
Well, actually, so that was what I was going to ask. How old, how could she say, how old is she? Let's think about it.
She's got to be, let's see.
We figured this out actually a couple of weeks ago. I think we spoke about.
How many years was it between Moshe and Rabbeinu and her?
Between Moshe and Aaron are 3 years.
Okay.
So we could assume also possibly that between Aaron and Miriam could be also 3 years, which means at this point this is immediately before Moshe's birth. How old is she? Probably about
six
years old. Five or six years old.
Before?
Okay, really something, huh? Okay.
3 years.
Now this begins our first flipping. We're going to start from the very beginning of Sefer Shemot. I'm reading Perek Aleph Pasuk Zayin, which brings us out on page 294-295, verse 16. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of the first was Shifra and the name of the second was Puah, as we just mentioned before. And he said, when you deliver the Hebrew women, then you shall see them on the birth stool. If it is a son, you are to kill him. If it is a daughter, she shall live. But the midwives feared God, and they did not do as the king of Egypt spoke to them, and they caused the boys to live. Okay, question on this pasuk. Not just so much on the pasuk, as much as on Paro's decree. It's an odd decree.
Right.
What's odd about it?
Because it's the women that proliferate. I mean, they're the ones that, you know, will, you know, give birth.
But they need the man's help, though.
The army.
Okay. But, and also, let's think halakhically, for the army, it's an interesting point, but halakhically also, if he keeps, as long as he keeps the women alive, the Jewish race is kept alive, because even if she cohabits with a man, she can't halakhically be Jewish. So it's really a very odd decree. Interesting thing. It is before Sinai, but, right, if you want to put halakhic colorings into it, it even
isn't there. But that's because of his magician saying that there's going to be a boy,
the
Midrashim say that? Oh, okay. So didn't he take that pretty seriously, that when the stargazer said that there's going to be a boy?
How do you know the stargazer said that?
No. Okay.
I'm asking you. No, I'm just
I thought that was brought down, that he would consult with his, you know, big magicians or astrologers and everything.
Okay.
And they read through the stars that was going to happen, that they would be redeemed.
So let's flip to verse number 2. Why was he so particular against the guys, against the boys? Ben, who? Why should she kill only the boys? Only on the boys. Exactly as you said. That because, and Rashi brings down the Midrash, because he was told in the stars that a son would be born who would save the Jewish people. And then he's going to lose all his free slave labor, you know. And there goes that. There's another opinion. We're leading into our next midrash. There's another opinion as to why she was called Puah. That not only did she stick her nose in Paro's face, but the midrash says in source number 3, Puah shehofia panim kineged aviha. She stuck her nose in her father's face. Who was her father?
Amram.
Shehaya Amram rosh Sanhedrin botasha. At that point, Amram was the head of the Sanhedrin. Kevan shegazar paro v'amar kol aben hayolod hayorat hashlichuhu. Here it says begomer. Begomer means etc. And when Paro gave the decree that every son should be born, that's born should be thrown into the Nile, Amar Amram, Vilarek Yisrael Molidim. Amram said that it's pointless for the Jewish people to have any children, because you're going to have the children, so they should immediately be killed. Miyad Hotziat Yocheved Ufirei Shashmo Mitashmish Hamita Figiresh Atishto. Immediately, he took out his wife. He divorced her when she was 3 months pregnant, even.
I thought she refused to divorce.
It could be he knew, it could be she knew. No, he divorced her. I know what you're thinking, but bear with me just a few more minutes. Now, since he's the head of Sanhedrin, if he's going to divorce his wife, everyone's going to divorce his wife. Amra lo bito, his daughter said to him, Gizera tak Hashem Yishal Paro. What are you nuts? You're making